We've got four collections, five watches each. We left dozens of absolutely awesome watches on the table. You know, we could each pick a 15 watch collection here and still not scratch the surface of everything that's come out.
There are some people who are angry.
I know.
There are some people who are angry listening right now.
Yeah.
Who made us do this anyways, Stevie?
Hey everybody, I'm your host Stephen Pulverin, and this is Hodinkee Radio. Alright, it's been a while since we did our last Hodinkee Radio Fantasy Draft, so we thought we'd start 2021 off the right way and get one in ASAP. And since we just rolled over from one decade to the next, now seemed like as good a time as any to look back at the last 10 years and some of our favorite watches from the decade. So today you're going to get the official Hodinkee Radio 2010s Fantasy Draft. I assembled Kara, James, and John to draft along with me, and we'll give you all the rules up front, so you don't need to worry about those quite yet. We cover sport watches, dress watches, budget-friendly watches, and a whole lot more, and I know that there's not going to be a single one of the 20 draft picks that's not going to drum up some kind of controversy. As always, though, you all, the listeners, get to pick the winner, so head over to hodinkee.com after you've listened, or check out the link in the show notes, and vote on which of the four collections you think takes the day. We'll be doing a recap show in a few weeks to reveal the winner and to recap the draft more broadly, so also be sure to drop your questions in the comments on the website so that we can answer as many of them as possible in that recap show. All right, I'm not going to hold things up any longer here, and without further ado, let's do this. Hey team, good to see everybody.
Hello friends.
Hey. See you too.
We got Kara, we got James, and we got John.
We got Gray in the background. Pressing.
We got Gray in the background. Gray's always
pressing here. The buttons, turning the knobs. Master in the mix.
Gray's always in the background. If anyone's hearing my voice, Gray's in the background. Otherwise, nothing's being recorded. You're not going to hear this. It's just me talking into the void. Mm-hmm. How's everybody doing so far? 2021. It's a doozy.
I can't wait for 2022. I'm really excited. It's definitely going
to
be my year.
I think we need to entirely just divorce ourselves of the Gregorian calendar.
Yes.
Okay. I think it's December 39th, 2020. Yeah. Right?
There's a good meme circulating.
That's a good way to frame it, John. I dig that.
I think we rebrand everything and just say these are the good days, and we start at good days day one today.
Oh, so there's that's good. I like that.
BCADGD.
Okay. I like that.
Sorry about your perpetual calendars.
It's a really optimistic way to look at the future, too. Mm-hmm. Like, every day is an opportunity for it to be another good day.
For sure. Dates don't make any difference. You don't need a date on your watch anymore.
You can't have to blame. I mean, we're sitting here recording a podcast talking about watches, so I feel pretty good.
Yeah, me too, to be honest. And we've got kind of a doozy for people today.
It's good. It's good day number one. Of course you feel good.
It's good day number one.
It's a special
we'll,
day.
We'll make sure to put when we set this live, we'll make sure to put which day on the good day calendar.
Sure.
This is launching.
Yeah.
So we got a fun one today. This is one we've kind of been chatting about for a while, and I'm glad we can finally do this. So this is gonna be the first fantasy draft of 2021. And depending on how you count the decades, if you count them the way we're going to count them today, it's the first fantasy draft of the decade, which makes it sound like a big deal, doesn't it? I don't know. Maybe.
It makes me feel old.
Oh,
because I'm thinking now in decades, because like the past decade really flew by. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you.
I still think that the 90s were like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Well,
I was a little weirded out when I realized that like, you know, we're looking back at watches of the decade today, and it was a little weird when I realized, like, I remember when everything on this list came out. Like, nothing on this list predates me, which is a little weird. But, so that's what we're doing today. So we're going to do the 2010s fantasy draft, 2010s fantasy draft, whatever you want to call it. It's been a crazy decade in watches. I think if we looked back at, like, what watches were like in, let's say, 2010, I think they'd be like almost unrecognizable from what we've seen today in terms of like the culture and the hype around it, the way that brands are working and developing new products. So I think we're going to get a pretty nice range of stuff here as we look back over the last 10 years in watches from 2011 to 2020.
Yeah, people did some cool stuff.
Yeah, it's been a really, really, really great decade actually for watches looking back at it.
Very robust.
The other thing I noticed just before we jump in, the other thing, and I wonder if you guys noticed this too, is it's really fun when you went back, depending on how far you went back in the last 10 years, you could literally like, it took me maybe a couple hours to prepare for this recording. And over that couple hours, I literally watched the entire landscape of watch media change. Where like, if you went back to, back to 2010, if you go back to 2010 and type in best watches of 2010, there's nobody wrote that post. And then if you fast forward to like 2015, 2016, suddenly there's six or seven players. People are talking about best watches of Baselworld, SIHH. There's like people doing recaps of, you know, it's December and they're looking back at the year. And then you move like just into like 2017, 2018. And now it's CNN, Business Insider, New York Times. Like people are getting in on it. And it's funny to see it go from like a couple of blogs that I remember reading when I was first getting into watches, then stuff that has like my name or my colleagues' names on it, and then stuff from like, you know, banner, English language media houses.
Yeah.
And that was all in 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, this was the decade where watches, went like really mainstream.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's basically the point you're making.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. My favorite thing I found, because James, like you, I spent a couple hours kind of like just digging through everything I could possibly find. And I found a pretty incredible picture of a beardless James Stacey shooting photos in a booth at Baselworld.
Baselworld 2013.
Pretty awesome. Yeah, you know which picture I'm talking about.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
There's only like 10 pictures of me out there.
But yeah, cool. So let's get into this. Let's set this up, and then let's spend most of the time talking about the watches, because let's be real. That's what people want to hear about. So we're doing the 2010s, 2010s fantasy draft, and we're each going to build a five watch collection. So we're going to build a collection that includes a sport watch, a dress watch, some sort of complication. It can't be a time only or a time and date watch. Those don't count. It can be something like a tourbillon that counts. Don't come at me with ultra thin. I'm not playing that game here. The classic Jack Forrester ultra thin is a complication. We're not playing that game today. He's right.
Is that why Jack's not here?
He's right, but we're not playing that game today. So that's complication. Then we got to do a budget pick. So something under $1,000. A lot of people just don't want to spend four figures on a watch. So there's plenty of cool options out there with two and three figure price tags. And then we'll let you have a flex spot, a wild card. You can pick anything you want to kind of round your collection out. So five watches, we're going to do it as a snake draft like we always do. And in the end, we'll end up with 20 watches that we think hopefully accurately represents the last 10 years in watches. Does that sound good to you guys?
Sounds great.
Super good.
Perfect. And then as usual, everybody will be able to vote. So if you're listening to this, go to hodinkee.com, find this post. It'll be linked up in the show notes and go vote. Tell us which collection you like best, and in a week or two, we'll unveil the winners here live on air. We'll get the four of us on, and Greg can tell us who the winners and I was going to say losers, but maybe like not so winners. Is that fair? I'll be all snowflakey about it. The winners and the less winners of this fantasy.
As someone
draft.
Likely to be a less winner, I do appreciate, you know, the the participation badge effect of this.
Yeah. That's what we're here for, James. We want everybody to feel good about watches. This isn't, we're not drumming anybody out here. Cool. Well, great. I think that's your cue as our producer to come on here and randomly generate the draft order so that I can't tamper with it and set myself up for a win.
This is a tamper-free process, super official, super ceremonial. Thank you to the good people at randomlist.org for helping us out with this.
Technical.
The order of this draft is as follows.
Come on.
Number one, Miss Cara Barrett.
Ooh.
I don't know who's last time.
Drafting at number two, Mr. James Stacey. At three, the host with the most, SJP. Ooh. And wrapping up at the turn is Mr. John.
There you go.
Ooh, the turn is tough. That's pressure, you know?
Oh, man. John and Kara's got the hot corner. That's all that matters. That's yeah. strong placement.
Yeah.
You get pick protection.
Exactly. I think this is going to be good. I like this order. I feel good about this one. I think this is going to generate some wacky stuff here.
Good luck, drafters. You're all winners in my book.
Let's just go for it. All right, CB, you're going to kick us off with the 20 teens watch collection fantasy draft. Pick number one. You're on the clock. Let's do this.
Okay. I'm gonna start with my wild card.
Okay.
It's really okay.
CB, I think someone's gonna just be clear.
It just
your
goal,
you're worried somebody's gonna take this walk?
Yeah, because I'm gonna pick the rainbow.
Oh,
that's gonna be the card, okay. And I don't want any of you guys taking it from me.
Honestly, I was gonna take it just to snipe Kara.
I know, because I sniped you last time.
All right, rainbow.
So I picked rainbow, which feels like a little obvious for me to pick because everybody knows I love it. But I do actually think that it's a very important piece for the decade in the way that it rounded out the decade. And I believe it was launched in 2018.
So you're talking about the Ever Rose.
I'm talking about the Ever Rose one.
Are we talking Pave or no Pave?
No Pave.
Okay.
No Pave. Because I think... So hear me out. So like there's always been rainbows. There've been rainbows since the 80s. I actually learned that today. Eric Koo posts this like insane date just in rainbow on his Instagram. I don't know if
it's
you guys
so
want
cool.
to check it out. It's amazing.
It's so cool.
Those were like kind of that was the first time the rainbows kind of came out or in the 80s. But I think the one from 2018, people really started talking about it more and it was more than just Italian watch dealers and celebrities wearing them. It was like people really started to notice them and respect stone gem set watches, which I don't think people in the enthusiast world necessarily did before. And I really, you know, I chalk it up to those indexes. Just gonna throw that out there. Those little colored sapphire indexes that match the bezel and just kind of made it perfect in my opinion. So also yeah. I just really liked it. So that's my
it's
wild
a pretty sick watch. It's a great wild card.
This yeah. this strategy could backfire on me big time, but
most likely it will, yes.
It's okay. You're allowed.
But also, do we know that this is carte blanche? Like there's no price except for the budget pick?
Correct.
Okay. Just want everyone to make sure that
exactly. Yeah, there's no price here. We're just trying to find the best of the best. We're not worrying about budgets.
We're living
and
in a pretend world.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go to the next pick. Mr. Stacy, you are up next. On the clock, pick number two.
Okay. I'm trying to decide what on my list is most likely to get picked by someone else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have many on this aspect of my list, so I'm going to start with my dress watch. And I'm going with what I think is kind of the ultimate Grand Seiko.
Ooh.
It also refers to their first model. So this is the 2017 LE, which they've kind of remade a couple times since then. So if you couldn't get that one, you know, it's in the details, but it's the SBGW 252. I'm a huge fan of this watch. I think it's absolutely gorgeous. This is the gold, the yellow gold version with sort of an opaline white dial. It refers back to, you know, what's typically called the 3180. Which is the first Grand Seiko. And I absolutely love this. I got, you know, Henry, our COO, has one of these and he kindly lets me wear it occasionally when I'm in New York and used to kick around the office. And it's a fun thing to have on wrist. It's absolutely gorgeous. And it's also, I like a dress watch, not unlike what I've got on here, but I like a dress watch that doesn't have to be just for when you're doing the suit and tie or a black tie. I like a dress watch that is still very comfortable. I don't want to give up other names, but of course, other brands do this really, really well. That where the watch is just comfortable being a watch; it doesn't have to be a part of an outfit. And I think the GS does that really well.
Yeah, I totally agree. I absolutely love that watch, and I'll tip my hat here a little bit and say I was going to put the Grand Seiko SBGW 033, which is the 2011. First reissue, because they've done multiple series of these. It's the little steel one, so it's 36 millimeters instead of the larger 38. I'll change that pick now just so we're not overlapping too close there. But I think these Grand Seiko First revivals are just absolutely just like perfect, stunning watches.
Yeah, they nailed them.
Yeah. And like you said, James, in yellow gold, it's just like, it's... I hate the word classy. Like, I think it's a terrible word.
Classy is like saying fancy.
Yeah.
It's almost dismissive at this point to say that something's classy or fancy.
Yeah, but like, honestly,
I like
that watch
they managed.
Kind of is classy.
I think it is kind of classy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also find that, like, personally speaking, I know this isn't an opinion that's shared by like the wider watch enthusiast world. I find a lot of Grand Seikos to be quite fussy.
Mm. Yeah.
They have a lot of fanciness to them. They're embellished. That, you know, it's a really incredible dial. It's these amazing markers, and it's like they just kind of pulled it all back to redo this watch, and that's where they started, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
And it also comes from a fantastic time for design in general, the early 60s, yeah. Be it Japanese, Italian, American, whatever.
Yeah,
totally. All right, I'm gonna go next. Pick three before we get to John, who's in the turn. So John will pick twice back to back after this. So I'm gonna go for something here that I have a funny feeling John was going to take, because if I don't, like, I'm screwed here. I'm gonna pick the Rolex GMT Master 2 12-67-10 Pepsi on Jubilee. I will preface this by saying, if I had to buy a modern Rolex from the last 10 years, this is not the one I would buy. I would buy the white dial 39mm Oyster Perpetual for me. I have a smaller wrist. I like super, super minimal watches. However, my first vintage Rolex was a vintage Pepsi GMT. I think if you go outside of maybe the Sub and the Datejust, or maybe the Sub and the Day-Date, the Pepsi is so unique, and it has so defined Rolex over the last, you know, over half a century. Now we're talking like, you know, 2/3 or 3/4 of a century. And to think that there wasn't a like modern Pepsi GMT for a long time blows my mind. Like, the idea that there could be a Rolex catalog without a watch like this in it shocks me. And I think, you know, when we got it in white gold on an Oyster bracelet, it was kind of the same. People had the same reaction that they had when Rolex released the platinum Daytona before the steel Daytona, where everybody was kind of like, what the fuck are you doing here? Like, why are you messing with us like this? Like, you know what we want. Just give us the damn watch we want. And the fact that Rolex did it and did it with the Jubilee bracelet, which I think looks awesome on Rolex sport watches. I'm like currently hunting for one for my Explorer, actually. I just think this watch is killer, and I know quite a few people who own them, including some folks on the team, and just like, I don't know. To me, this is one of the like serious contenders for best watch of the last 10 years in my book.
Great pick.
Oh, Stevie, cutthroat.
That's a great pick.
You got to, because honestly, I'm going to take a wild guess, John. If I didn't pick this, you were going to pick the Batman on Jubilee, weren't you?
I was going to pick actually the original Batman, because I think it was like it was new, and it brought a totally new kind of look to the GMT, right? Because there hadn't been another, you know, black and blue just hadn't been a combination that had appeared on a bezel in the past for the GMT. So I was going to pick it for its novelty. Of course, I have the one on the Jubilee, but that actually wasn't the first one that I had on my list. It was
interesting.
It was on there for sure for my sport watches, but I had something else. So I'm going to go ahead and take my first choice.
Yeah. Wait, so sorry, before you go, just to clarify, I'm picking that as my sport watch, to be clear. That's not my wild card. That's my sport watch.
Okay.
All right, John, let's go. We got picks 4 and 5 here. So hit us with pick number 4.
And just one other question, just for like rules and clarification purposes, since you're taking the Pepsi takes the old GMT Masters off the table, it sounds. Does Kara's selection of the Daytona take, the Rainbow take all Daytonas off the table?
I would say here, let's not set a hard rule. Let's just use common sense here. So I would say, like, if you pick a steel Daytona with a ceramic bezel, that's different. I would say, like, picking the Batman on Jubilee is like, that to me is like a dial color, bezel color variation.
And I think it also falls into a different category.
I think the ceramic Daytona is substantively different from the Rainbow Daytona.
That's a fair point.
And it serves a different purpose. it serves a different purpose, I think.
Yeah. So if you want to go ceramic Daytona, the 1165 00 is still open for you.
Cool. So here's what I'll do. I'll start with my sport pick, and I'll take what was my number one sport pick, and it's actually not that watch, and I think it may surprise maybe all of you. It's the original Tudor Black Bay Burgundy from 2012.
Ooh, that's a strong pick, man.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, so this is a more affordable watch, obviously, but it's a watch that really set Tudor off and made it into the enthusiast's kind of darling that it has remained. And this came out in 2012. I don't own this watch. I do own a Black Bay, a different version, but I wouldn't own the Black Bay that I currently own if this watch hadn't come out in 2012. And so I think it's an incredibly important watch, for the watch industry, for collectors, and definitely for Tudor. So that's my first pick.
All right. And that's your sport watch.
That's my sport watch. Yeah.
That's a good pick.
That's a great pick.
Probably one of the most important watches of that decade.
Yeah.
Certainly for Tudor.
Yeah, I mean, I
would agree.
I think it's probably their most important watch of the decade, actually, just in terms of the what it allowed to come after it, right?
Yeah, and their return to the U.S.
The return to the U.S., actually, it was pegged to that return. And yeah, so I think that's it. In terms of my wild card, I am going to go with the ceramic Daytona since it's still on the table.
Ooh, interesting.
Dang.
Yeah.
So we have so the Black Bay, the standard 41 millimeter Black Bay is off the table. The Rolex GMT is off the table and the Rolex Daytona is off the table. And we're at pick number 5.
Yeah. I mean, you knew the big picks were going to go fast, right? We knew that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And so I'm picking this one really for a very similar reason to why Stephen took, the ceramic Pepsi. This is a watch that, as Stephen mentioned, the platinum version with the blue dial and brown ceramic and platinum came out first. Enthusiasts were maybe a little bit disappointed by that because it wasn't kind of bread and butter commercial type watch that they were hoping for. But then I think that would have been in like 4 years prior that the platinum one came out. Then you finally got the steel ceramic Daytona. And it's arguably the hardest to get, mainline Rolex sport watch there is, right?
Still, years later, you still can't get them, which is insane.
Yeah. Even more than the GMTs, it's the hard watch to get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think those are great picks, John. Oh, I think that's a strong start.
Agreed.
Daytona and Black Bay is a good foundation.
All
right, so I'm back on the clock as we snake back the other way in the draft. I'm going to go with my budget pick because I think it's the highest likelihood of getting taken. I struggled with this category because there are so many good options, which was really heartening, actually. I feel like we spend a lot of time focused on the higher price point stuff. And by that, I mean, anything $3,000 and up, is really predominantly what we spend our time focused on. And it was kind of nice to just go back and see that, whether it's because you're younger or you just have a smaller budget or whatever, you don't have to spend a stupid amount of money to get a watch that you can enjoy. And so I'm going to take the Hamilton Khaki Field Mechanical, which came out in 2018. They came out with some additional colorways in 2019 and 2020, but the original came out in 2018. My first thought when I looked at this watch was, where the hell was this watch in 2007, 2009, when I could have saved up and bought one of these, when I was in college, or when I was looking to buy my first watch. I wish this watch had existed. I didn't know enough about vintage at the time to search for a vintage L.L. Bean Field watch or whatever. I also sure as hell wasn't able to buy a Rolex Explorer. And this is that happy middle ground. It's a modern watch. It's hand wound. It's time only. It's made really well. It comes in a couple different colors. It looks good on basically any strap. And you get all of that for a grand total of between $450 and $550, depending on which colorway you want to buy it in, whether it's a PVD finish or not. I don't think pound for pound, there's a better deal out there in this category. That's my take. But I just like, I absolutely love this watch. And as I was putting this list together, just kept coming back and back and back to this piece as my budget pick. So that's where I'm at on this one.
You got me there, Steven. That was my number one budget pick.
I had a funny feeling.
That's a good one. Yeah, it's a classic. Sure. Yeah. Modern classic, if you will.
No doubt. Yeah, solid pick for sure. That brings it to me, and I'm going to go with my sports watch. It's also a Tudor, and it's the Pelagos Blue, launched in 2015. I absolutely adore this watch. I've had a chance to dive with it. I've had a chance to wear it around, take a lot of pictures of it. I think it's perfect in many ways. The weird thing is it's one of those things where I think the only reason I don't own one is because I keep holding out hopes that they'll make a GMT version. But of course, I could have had the last 6 years wearing one. If I just looked beyond, you know, some of the niches in which I like to play. But yeah, for sure. It's incredible on the bracelet. It comes with one of the best rubber straps in the world. It arguably has the finest buckle fitted to any sports watch in existence, like clasp. It's the self-sizing spring fed. It's an incredible dive watch, but it also doesn't weigh enough to make any difference day to day. If you dress like me and exist in my world, you could buy this watch and wear it for 40 or 50 years and be perfectly fine with it. I've seen a couple that have taken a lot of scratches. And once you get through that titanium zone where you have two or three scratches and it turns into like 40 or 50 or 100 scratches, they're gorgeous. Because the bezel doesn't age at all. You know, it's this matte crayon blue in ceramic. I think they're really beautifully made. I like that they're the flagship from a Rolex dive watch standpoint. Like arguably you could say that something like a Sea Dweller or the Deep Sea has a more storied history than the Pelagos. So I'll give you that. I wouldn't necessarily agree that it's any more better as a dive watch.
Yeah.
I just think they made something super cool. And now the funny thing is they've made, they only made three versions, right? Of the Pelagos, the black, the blue, and the LHD. And I think they don't need to make a fourth, unless it's a GMT, but they don't need to make a fourth. It's just time and date. Because I feel like that covers their bases super well. The black one's gorgeous. The blue one, in my opinion, is just more special. And it's a little bit of color. And I like a watch that's, you know, has some color to it sometimes. And then the LHD is absolutely the like oddball. So I think not as important as what John picked to the company itself. But I think if you're Rolex, if you're Tudor, and you want to exist in the world of super high end dive watches, you kind of need a flagship, and I think this one's perfect.
And that clasp alone too. I mean, it's just so crazy. Nice.
So nice.
Yeah. Awesome. I think that's a great pick.
Yeah, I think so too.
CB, you're up now, and you're at the turn, so you've got two picks back to back.
Okay. Have all of you chosen your sports watch?
Yeah, I think all of us have picked our sport watch.
I have not. I've only picked my wild card. I'm going to pick my complication next. Okay. Actually, no, I'm going to do my budget next. And then I'm gonna
all right.
My budget, because I haven't decided what I want to do for complication. For my budget watch, it's going to be any of the Hodinkee Swatch limited editions, because they were a first in this decade, I think. 4 years ago,
yep.
2016, Stevie, you were there. Stevie was the captain of the launch of the first Swatch limited edition Hodinkee. But aesthetically, I'm going to pick the one we just launched because I'm biased and I just really like the California dial. So that's my budget pick, and Swatch is just iconic, so you can't really go wrong there. And then I'm going to pick my complication.
So before you do that, I want to go back to the System 51. That was on my short list for budget picks too. And I think, I mean, I don't know about you guys. I remember when the System 51 came out, it completely blew my mind. Like it was such a huge deal. And I think we all kind of take for granted now that this like robot made, hermetically sealed, all plastic, affordable mechanical watch exists. But like this came out, I think it, like, this thing totally changed everything earlier in the decade. Like this, when this came out, everybody was like, holy shit, like Swatch Group has done changed the game again, and it's going to go crazy. And this laid also, the System 51 laid the foundation for a bunch of movements that they're now using in like Tissot's, and I think there's even a Longines or two that use these movements. So like the System 51, not just our LEs, but like the System 51 in general, I think is actually one of the more like underrated pieces of watch news from the last 10 years.
It's an icon.
Yeah.
Let's see how many times I can use that word in this episode.
Car's entire collection.
I mean, like from the moment it launched, like, from the moment that watch launched, the System 51, that was something that like everyone I remember being super excited about, and it was affordable enough that like people were buying them like crazy. It came out right around SIHH when it came out, right? And I remember like, and you could only get it in Switzerland, and I remember buying one at the Geneva Airport, and my boss at the time buying one, and like everybody was just like getting these watches if they could, you know.
It was a thing where, like, when you went to Switzerland, it was people would be like, oh, hey, can you bring me back a System 51?
Yeah.
All right, CB, what's your complication? Have you made your pick?
I've decided. I'm going to do the 5270P from Patek, which is the salmon dial with the black Arabic numerals on it, the perpetual calendar chronograph. Obviously not like a new complication for Patek, but aesthetically this watch just really sealed the deal for me on that complication with them. Obviously they're one of the best when it comes to making that complication, but the black numerals and they're not black hands, they're kind of like super dark silver and they reflect black or something. Anyways, I just think it like they hit that one out of the park, and it still remains very like fresh and modern while also getting back to like the vintage era where they really kind of killed it, in my opinion. So that's my complication.
So that's the, I think, 2018?
I believe I wrote it down. Yes, 2018.
Right. So the salmon, why that one over the, I think it's the 15 or the 14 2570 white dial, black onyx markers, no chin.
I just love the salmon dial with the Arabic numerals. Right. I'm a big Arabic numeral gal.
Those black and onyx markers kill me.
Yeah, they're amazing. And that's like something, I think it's what really got me was that it looks really sporty while also being highly complicated and in precious metal. And I like that kind of juxtaposition and hybrid of kind of like, I feel like you could wear it anywhere. And
yeah.
So I also like that little diamond in between the lugs. Same.
Well, that's why it's
the little diamond in between the lugs is maybe the most gangster thing Patek does. It might actually be my favorite thing about Patek. And like more than the watches, I just love that they put the little diamond.
I know. I love looking at it.
Pretty rad. Yeah.
So that's my pick.
Oof. Okay.
All right. That's looking good. So then it goes back to James.
Yeah, boy. So I had the 5270 as my comp.
Yep.
I hit the lower button on my chair with my calf. Really just lost a few inches there. All right. We can take that again. We can take that again. I'll stop dancing under the desk. So I had the 5270 on for my comp as well, but of course I have a backup. And I don't think I can get through this list without a travel watch of some sort. Cause I gave, usually my sport watch would be the travel watch as well. It would have bundled together. But the 2010s didn't, there were some excellent travel watches that came out. But not any that kind of melded those two together in a way that I would really want. So this isn't going to come as a surprise to most people, but it's the Patek Aquanaut 5164A. It still remains probably my, it's not realistic, some sort of a grail watch out there. Maybe if the right bank happens to be held up by the right person, maybe I see one of these one day. But I think the as much as the R is incredible, I think I would want steel. I would want it in steel, and then if you had the ability to do so, I think on the green rubber would essentially be.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could take it off. I love that watch so much.
I totally agree. I saw somebody wearing one of those a couple weeks ago in line to get a breakfast burrito in Malibu.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, and was like, that's, that guy's fucking doing it right.
That's, you know, Malibu.
Like this guy just like went on a hike and is grabbing a like chorizo and egg breakfast burrito, rocking that watch. Like that's my guy. Yeah.
Almost made a new friend.
Sorry, by the way, I just realized saying I saw a guy wearing a Patek in Malibu getting a breakfast burrito is one of the, like, man, I, uh-huh. Yeah, guys, I appreciate all of you not hanging up on me. As I said, that was a charity. Jesus. Wow.
All right. Well, I'm passing on to you, Stevie. You got your third pick. Let's hear it.
You're up. What else have you seen in Malibu?
None of these things.
I'm muting you again if you do that.
Yeah, yeah. From now on, you have to call it the Boo.
The Boo.
Boo-boo. All right,
cool. The Boo. Mm-hmm. I was up in the Boo.
Otherwise, you get muted.
All right.
Fair's fair.
I'm gonna pick my wild card because I think it's the thing most likely to get taken. I think the other two are pretty safe. I think. If not, I'm gonna be real mad. But as my wild card, I'm gonna take the 15202. The Royal Oak Jumbo 15202 ST. The basic steel blue dial, like no bullshit, no limited editions, no precious metals. Just like, give me one perfect unit of Royal Oak, please. And this watch was released in 2012 for the 40th anniversary of the Royal Oak. First time I ever saw this watch was on Houdinki back in the day when it was Ben, like I think still at his desk somewhere, working as a consultant probably, or in actually be in journalism school. And, this watch is just so damn good. And again, it's another one of those watches that, like, the Pepsi, I just, like, can't imagine AP's catalog without this watch, despite the fact that it's another watch you can't buy. Like, you can't walk into a boutique and even see one in most places. But, like, I don't know. I think AP over the last 10 years has completely refocused its personality and its kind of character away from the, like, bright, blingy, limited edition, everything offshore chronographs, back to like more reserved. It's about like interesting uses of materials, interesting movements. And like this watch, the 15202, not only served as the platform for stuff like the white gold one with the salmon dial, which is awesome, or the yellow gold one with the matching yellow gold dial, I think even more awesome.
Perfect.
But it also laid the foundation for stuff like the open worked double balance wheel. Like it laid the foundation for like all of these amazing things that AP's done. And I just like, I don't think AP is what it is today without this watch. And I can't imagine the last 10 years of watches without AP the way they are. So I'm going to take that as my wild.
I mean, there's no AP without Royal Oak.
Agreed. Yeah. And I think.
They're not around. They're not around at all.
And I think without the Jumbo, the Royal Oak isn't what it is today. I don't think it's as popular now as it is without the Jumbo.
Yeah, I would agree.
So
agreed.
That's my wild card. Taking the Jumbo.
Yeah, solid pick.
John, you get to pick two times back to back. And then that's the last time you get to pick until the last pick of the draft.
Oh, okay. All right. I think I'm going to change something up. This is one that I actually, it just honestly, for whatever reason, I didn't have it on my list, but I really should have when we started. But I just added it. And I'm going to say for my dress watch, the Creedor Ichitu. I think this
very
is,
nice.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I knew that I wanted to have something from like the Seiko family among my picks because I am a Seiko lover. I love Grand Seiko. Creedor is something that I can kind of like only dream about. But I think the Ichitu is, you know, it's just like a watch that sets such an incredibly high bar for what is possible in terms of what I would say is like that, you know, Creedor / very high-end great Grand Seiko approach to watchmaking, which is just like finishing to an unbelievably high level. You know, it's just like, but then it also brings an innovative movement into the, that is something that you can't get a movement quite like it from any Swiss watchmaker that might be able to, finish the watch to a comparable level. So it's a beautiful dress watch, with a really beautiful dial, and all of that, all of the requisite, focus on dial finishing that you or that we would tend to expect from a very high-end Grand Seiko or a Creedor. It's an original movement that's finished really to the nines. And I just think it's a very special watch. So I'll take that for my dress watch.
All right. So are you going platinum white dial, platinum blue dial, or are you going rose gold white dial?
I'm going to go rose gold white dial.
Okay. I think that's the choice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially our friend of the show, shout out to Matt Jacobson, wears that watch on like a taupe, like textured strap, one of those like marbled calfskin straps. And it is just like, it's absolute lights out.
Yeah. Such a cool watch. That's a real dream watch for me. I'll take that one for my dress watch. For my, what do I have left? I have to pick a, I've done sport. I've done dress now. Okay. I'll do my complication next. And I'm going to do the Vacheron Constantin Cabinetier Celestial Astronomical Grand Complication 3600.
Okay.
Because that is a complication.
John just big timed all of us, everybody.
Well, I mean, well, if you think I used my flex on a watch that is, I guess, complicated. It's a chronograph, but it wasn't, it's a flex more like hard watch to get kind of thing than super flex. So this is my complication, but it's also kind of like my flex, I guess you could say. But it's all, this is I think it's like 45 millimeters, which is big, but like very wearable, compared to, there are so few watches in the world that even come close in terms of how complicated they are. But those watches all tend to be much bigger than this one. This is, this one came out in like 2016, I think. And it was really, it was a watch that showed that this type of highly, complex multi-complication could be packaged as a fairly discreet looking, for what it has, very wearable wristwatch. And for all of those reasons, I'm going to take this one for my complication, but also my flex.
Wild pick. I like it.
That is a wild pick. That was not on any of my notes of like possible backup options or like options at all. But I think that's a pretty strong pick. And I think also it touches on something bigger, which I don't know. For me, at least, I tried to make all my picks like at least have some relevance to like what happened over the last 10 years. And Vacheron has like quietly just been kicking ass with complications, inventing new ones, doing really interesting combinations of complications, making these unique pieces through the Cabinetier program. Yeah. I mean, don't forget they made the most complicated watch in the world, that massive pocket watch. Mm-hmm. So like, I think a very complicated Vacheron is quietly like one of the better picks of the draft so far.
Oh, thanks. And you mentioned that extremely complicated pocket watch. And I mean, it was so long ago when that came out, but if memory serves, it was part of a plan, right? To make a watch with all of these complications and then be able to kind of like roll them out individually or in different, packages kind of over time. I may want to fact check that, but I think that was something that was talked about when it came out.
I remember when the pocket watch came out, I was working at Bloomberg at the time and they brought it to the office so that we could do like a segment on Bloomberg TV with it. And they had me hold it on Bloomberg TV, like showing the camera. And I was just, all I could think is like, God, I hope I don't drop this fucking thing on television. Like that was all that was, it was just like, don't drop it. Please don't drop. Like I'm like just like shaking, trying not to drop this thing on live television. But I didn't, so I'm here instead of in debtor's prison. So cool on that one. I guess it's back to me, right, John?
It is. Yeah,
sure is. You've
all right.
You've got a what do you need? A dress or a complication?
Yeah, a dress and a complication. I'm gonna take my dress watch first because I want my complication to be my last pick, mostly because I also think it's the thing least likely, like it's the thing least likely to get stolen. I will say that I had the Ichi 2 on my short list, like my very, very short list. It was that was kind of a toss up between that and what I'm going to pick for my dress watch, which is the Acrivia Chronomet Contemporain. It's a 2018 watch. This might be the watch made over the last decade that I want the most. Recep, it's made by Recep Recepi. He's like the nicest dude. He's like about my age. Like, we've had beers in Geneva. He's just like a good human being who also happens to be a spectacularly talented watchmaker. And this watch,
those watches are bonkers.
They're insane. And like, most of what he does under the Acrivia name is not my style at all. It's like, it's beautifully made, but it's like crazy tourbillons and like everything's a little bit over the top, I would say. This watch is a very modern take on what a simple dress watch can be. The fact that the movement architecture is perfectly symmetrical, it's finished, I think, as well, if not better than like a Dufour Simplicity. I don't know. Like, I think unlike a watch like a Simplicity, like, I don't know, I could wear this watch on a more casual strap and wear it with like a t-shirt and be perfectly happy. So yeah. So I'm gonna take the Chronomet Contemporain. I'm gonna take it in platinum with the white dial, not the rose with the black dial. The rose with the black dial is absolutely beautiful. But I think that's like a real dress watch. I like that the other one you can kind of dress it up and down.
Good pick.
It's a winner. It's a great watch.
I've also
and
got
very you. You've been about that watch for a while.
Yeah. It's, I think, a very predictable pick. I just noticed that three of my four picks are from 2018. Quietly 2018.
That was a year for me too. No, it was a big year for me.
2017 was my year.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Ton of stuff went down in 2017.
Okay. So James, are you
like my next pick?
I was gonna say, are you picking another 2017 watch here? nice segue.
I am, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Professional journalist James Stacey. Mm-hmm.
So my pick for my budget pick is a watch that's probably a brand and certainly the model that would link up to like the closest core to my development as a watch writer, and that would be the Haleo C4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this is an easy sub-$1,000, a $685 watch when it came out. It's also like, you know, I followed and was kind of birthed into the stream of micro brands back in the early 2010s, very early 2010s, maybe end of the 2000s. And this kind of, for me, was like a turning point where we hadn't become this thing where everything had to be Kickstarter and very flashy and highly produced and the rest of it to become popular, but it also wasn't something that was just being sold on forums. Instagram was old enough by the time the C4th came along, and the C4th is the fifth or sixth watch in Haleos's kind of legacy, their development. But I think it's where they like, where Jason really nailed the size, the spec, the price, the color. We started to see a lot more kind of color variations. And of course, these were watches where I had a Series 1, which we auctioned off for charity. A Series 1 pastel dial, no date, 12-hour bezel. I think it's just about a perfect watch, super wearable, not very thick. You could get them in a more reserved, like black dial, more simplified. And these are watches that like dropped his website, dropped his Spotify, or dropped his Shopify, like could not sell them. He had to figure out different methodologies for dealing with the level of interest in far further away time zones from Vancouver. So he would drop them in two batches. And it's just not something that was common to the space, where a great watch could come out and maybe the company had the money to make 100 of them or 200 of them. And it would take a couple months. They would sell out. Then they would start to trickle into Watch You Seek. This is something else entirely, where he had built up a following across all these other watches. And I was, you know, one of the first watches I reviewed as a watch writer was a very early, the earliest Haleos stuff, and to see it kind of coalesce to something that felt like you looked at it and you go like, well, this could stand next to a lot of what I like from Swiss watches at a certain price point. So yeah, definitely a bigger price point than what we were paying for it. I absolutely adore it. I do miss that watch. It went to a great home for charity. And I also have a very limited version that they did with a retailer in Vancouver called Roldorf, which is a like a black DLC case and this really gorgeous metallic green over cream tuxedo dial. And that's a watch that I absolutely love. It makes me think of Vancouver, which I feel is, you know, kind of my emotional home. And I absolutely love these watches. I think they remain huge value. And then that watch, there's no more C4th being made, but the aesthetic and everything that Halley has learned from the Seaforth is paying forth into the Universa and the Fairwind, which are their, you know, upcoming models. It was also the first thing I wrote for Hodinkee under my own byline.
Hmm.
There you go.
Was a hands-on with the Seaforth pastel. So that was way back in 2017.
Big year.
That's a watch I immediately associate with you. I'm glad it made it in.
Sick watch. Big fan.
I'm also glad we got a micro brand in here. Like, I think that's another one of the like trends over the last 10 years that we haven't really touched on here is there's just been an explosion.
We should do a micro brand draft for sure.
Yeah, for sure. But there's been an explosion of small brands popping up and people who are just passionate about watches who found a way to kind of make this either a living or a hobby or whatever. And yeah, I had a couple little micro brand watches on my long list.
For sure. I mean, to pick the Halios, there were a couple, and I don't know if has everyone else made their budget.
I have not.
No.
John. So I won't bring this up because John, I hope you pick the one that I couldn't because we could only pick one. Because there were some, I think, hugely influential watches. There is a hugely influential watch in the sub $500 space that we haven't talked about. That I think kind of brought a huge wave of people back into. Entry-level watches. But I think that Halios has to be seen on a list like this. Definitely, I want one in my collection. And if we're talking about five watches, it would be my budget pick easy. Money well spent.
Nice. All right. CB, you're going to make your last two picks, and yes. Then each of us will get to make one more pick, and that rounds out the draft. So what are you using to round out your collection? What are your last two picks?
I have dress and sport.
Okay.
So my dress choice is not, how do I say this? I don't think it's like a groundbreaking choice, but if we're picking like watches for a collection that we would hypothetically wear, I would pick the Cartier, Maison de Cartier, which they actually just came out with last year. I have been secretly harboring a big crush on bracelet watches, like ladies' dress bracelet watches. It's been kind of, I feel like I look back at like how I like started with watches and it was like men's only. And then now I've kind of like circled back to kind of more jewelry focused pieces because they have their own merits and I think that they are worth talking about. This one is something that was inspired by the 70s. It's really simple. It's just a gold bracelet. And if I have to wear it with a cocktail dress, then I think it looks best as a bracelet. So that's my pick for dress. I know you guys were vying to choose that for yours, but
that's a great watch though.
Yeah.
Tough.
It's a great watch and it's I'm glad that we got Cartier on the draft as well.
Yeah. So. I mean, they're kind of, for me, Cartier is like dress watch. No, like
the brand.
Yeah. Like no brainer. And then I left my sport to last. And this one was tricky for me because obviously there's so many amazing sports watches that have come out in the past decade and like we're living in the era of steel sports watches. So it's kind of impossible to pick just one. I think, you know, the OP39 was there for me, but I didn't want to upset too many people because it's been discontinued. I don't want to ruffle those feathers. So I wanted to pick something that was a little bit more kind of representative of the past decade design-wise. So I went with the Octo Finissimo in titanium. Super thin bracelet, really comfortable. It's a luxury sports watch, to say the least, but at the same time, it's still a sports watch. It's really lightweight and durable. And I just think that design is so different from anything else. You could argue it's similar to the Royal Oak, but just the profile of it alone makes it completely different.
That's a bad argument.
And I think that it wouldn't be the 20... teens without mentioning Bulgari's kind of foray into the men's watch market and how they really have been like pushing the boundary, not only technologically, but also aesthetically. So that's my sports pick.
Good pick. Yeah. Not what I expected.
I know you thought I was going to go Rolex.
There's a big one hanging that nobody's picked yet. And I think everybody's sports picks are made.
I think so too
at this point. So
yeah,
I'm kind of blown away because I didn't even bother putting it on my list because I assumed it would be the first pick by one of you guys.
Which one?
Yeah. So. I mean,
Well, I mean, there's still game left.
Yeah, there's still game left to play. There's time on the clock, Cara.
No name and picks until
yeah,
we're done.
When we're done, we'll talk about it. And we'll also do, when we recap the results of this, we'll also do a little bit of a postmortem, because I think it's worth looking back and saying, like, okay, what didn't get picked? What would we change about our picks if you could add a sixth watch? So we'll be doing all that in a future episode. So keep those notes in mind.
Okay. I just want my team to be well-rounded. So
totally. Yeah.
It's a good stack for sure.
James, you want to take your last pick?
Yeah. So mine's my wild card. And if I'm honest, I'm still really, really split on what I'm picking. Because one is, I think, the natural pick for the wild card. I think there is one natural winner for the wild card watch of the 2010s. But there's one that means way more to me.
Okay.
And I think I'm going to go with that one. And that would be the one of one Vacheron Constantin dual time prototype.
Oh, yeah.
So they made it in titanium with a woven sort of fabric style strap. And Corey Richards, who was kind enough to come on the Grenado, who's an exceedingly talented photographer and adventurer. And fun enough, they're actually redoing this project now. But back when that came out in 2018, he and a partner were attempting a route of Everest that had never been done before, a virgin route. And then on top of that, we're doing so without Sherpa support and without supplemental oxygen, which is a remarkable task. It didn't work out, as these things quite commonly don't. If they'd done it on their first try, it would have been remarkable, but also, you know, just how the dice go. Anyways, I got a chance to see this watch in person. I like that it's a one of one. It's worth a fraction of the other one I was thinking of. And it recently sold at auction. So someone out there does have it. Maybe someday it'll be mine. Who knows?
Yeah.
I love this watch. I really love Corey. He gave a fantastic interview that an interviewer such as myself does not deserve, which is very kind of him. And I really, I've been following his work since then. So that one's more of a personal pick for a fun moment from the last decade. I was down in New York, you know, it was a nice night in Brooklyn and getting to hang out with some neat people. And so often, you guys can appreciate this because you'll hear me complain about it occasionally on the Slack or whatever. When I'm assigned to deal with third party figures in the watch world, they're usually athletes. And I don't know anything about sports.
James, I thought you were Mr. Sports.
The way I work. Yeah. For sure. It's always, well, this guy's a very famous person who's like a very important person. And I'm just like, I've never heard his name before. Yeah. It happened like one meeting ago. Someone brought up someone's name and they're like, this is a huge get. It's incredible. And I'm like, I'm nodding. I'm like, uh-huh. And I'm like Googling the person's name. I'm like, oh, he's a basketball player. Okay, cool. He shooting the threes. So it's fun when it's somebody
three-pointers.
An element. Yeah, three-pointers for sure.
Move the chains. Only threes. Move the chains.
Yeah, you got it. It's an offensive game. But yeah, it's fun for me that it was from a world that I have endeavored to understand. I've read a lot of books about mountaineering. I've done a little bit of it myself. And to meet kind of like an alpinist photographer with this really rad watch from a company that I simply adore. I would love to one day own a Vacheron Constantin, even if it's not this one, just a Vacheron Constantin.
Yeah.
It was just a special moment. It's one I think of with some frequency.
Yeah. I think that's an awesome choice. I love that. That was hot another one too. Not on my radar. But keep notes on what you think was the perfect wild card pick, because we'll do that in the recap. I want to know what that is.
Oh, I think... no, I guess we can't pick
yeah.
it.
Okay. Also, let's save it.
All right.
So for my last pick, I'm going to pick a watch that I don't think would be on anybody else's radar. I purposefully tried to come up with something that I thought was kind of out of the ordinary. I am not somebody who owns complicated watches. You know, I've owned a couple of them in the past, calendars, chronographs. I always end up selling them. I just don't need them. Like, I just don't enjoy it at the end of the day. So I was trying to think of what would be a like very me complication pick. And I picked the Lange 1 Tourbillon Handwerkskunst from 2014. Mm-hmm. I was in Dresden for the release of this watch. And it's a total bomb. It's unbelievable. And I've since then only seen one in the wild. They made 20 of them. And I happened to be chatting with a collector at an event we hosted in maybe like 2017. And I knew he's a big Lange collector. And I was like, oh, what do you have on your wrist tonight? And he just casually was like, oh, this. And like my jaw hit the floor. This watch is, it's the first time Lange ever did a black enamel dial, and they made them in-house. They made them themselves. It looks like a pretty basic Lange 1 if you look at it quickly. And then you notice this huge sheet of black enamel, which is crazy. It essentially just looks like black glass, because it is essentially just black glass. And then the Lange 1 tourbillon, I love that you can see the tourbillon on the front, but only kind of. Like, if you want to see the full view, you have to turn the watch over. But from the front, there's like a little cutout, and you get this beautiful sort of like swooping mirror polished bridge. I love Lange. This watch to me is Lange flexing about as hard as they possibly can, but doing it in a way that feels very them. Like, they're not trying to compete with anyone. They're not trying to prove anything to anyone. They're just like, yeah, we're a Langenzone and we make some of the best watches in the world. Duh. Like, it's, I just love it. And this one's really, really stuck with me. Again, I saw it in 2014, in December, or yeah, I saw it in late 2014 when it came out. And then I didn't see one again until 2017 and haven't seen one since. And somehow this is still a watch I find myself thinking about probably more than I should. More than is healthy for a $200,000 watch that I couldn't buy even if I had the money.
It's a solid pick. I've never seen, I know the watch you're speaking of. I've certainly never seen it in person, but I had the Lange 1 refresh, the 2015 with the new, you know, from the outside being a Lange, you wouldn't necessarily know, but they made some significant movement changes and such in 2015 and kind of relaunched the one. But for, to go complicated, I mean, go complicated, right?
Yeah.
So I get it. Yeah. That's killer watch.
Thanks, man.
What a brand.
Yeah. What a brand. You want to take us home, John? You want to close this thing out?
Let's do it. So as we've gone through this, I think one kind of category of watch that we haven't selected yet is the quartz watch, right?
That's true. No quartz picks.
And they're on the table. They're available to us if we want to pick them. So for my budget,
a little desk watch was quartz.
Oh, that's true. The Maison de Cartier is quartz.
Oh, that's right. Okay. So this will be the second one then. But for my budget pick, I'm going to go with a Q Timex, I happen to have the Hodinkee one. That's the one I have. But you know, this could be any of them. The one that I was actually thinking of when I put it on the list was the one Cole wrote about, the original one that they came out with, not the original, but like the one from I think 2019, and kind of, you know, set the internet on fire when he covered it. When I got the Hodinkee one and started wearing it, it's honestly one of the few watches I own that my wife ever like stopped me and grabbed my wrist and was like, that is a great looking watch. The bracelet and just kind of like the small form factor or the very wearable form factor. That bracelet is great. And it's a watch that really kind of snuck up on me. I got it because I just wanted to have it when it came out. I thought it would be a nice thing to have. But then I put it on and I ended up wearing it a lot toward the end of last year. And I've been wearing it, I haven't worn it yet in this new year, but I imagine I'll, you know, be wearing it a lot in 2021 as well. It's a good budget pick. And, you know, I don't want to hate on quartz watches. I think they can be cool too.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That's a great pick. I think that does it for us. We've got four collections, five watches each. We left dozens of absolutely awesome watches on the table. Like, I feel
there are some people who are
so many.
Angry.
I know.
There are some people who are angry listening right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Blame for so many.
I know. I kind of honestly.
It's honestly hard.
I was going back over my list this morning as I was doing like final prep for this. And I was like, oh shit, what can of worms did I open here? Like this is. Yeah. I think we each could have picked.
We need to do another round with other editors. Cause honestly, there were so many left of people. And I think it was hard.
I agree.
This could be the East draft. Like we'll do a West draft.
Oh, that's a good point. Should we do divisions here?
What?
let's save.
I only know East and West drafts. I didn't realize they're called divisions.
Let's save most team. Of the recap stuff for the follow-up episode because we've got plenty here for people to listen to. Let's let people digest this and vote on their own ideas. Let's do this in the order we drafted in. So, Kara, how about you go first and just walk us through your five picks? Tell us the category and the watch, and then we'll move on. And it'll go Kara, James, me. and John, and that'll close us out for today.
Okay. Okay. So my draft picks were, I'm not really sure the tense. Sport was Octofinissimo in titanium, the bracelet. Dress was the Cartier, Maillon de Cartier. Maillon? I'm not really sure how to say that. Complication was the 5270P. And my budget was any of the Swatch Hodinkee System 51s, but specifically the one that came out last year. And my flex was the Rainbow from 2018.
All right. That's a very Cara Barrett collection.
It is. It might be too much. It might be too much Cara.
All right. We'll see. We will let the people decide.
Not up to us.
Up to fate.
My five in the same order. Sport was Pelagos Blue. The dress was the SBGW 252 from Grand Seiko. I had my complication is the 5164A, preferably with a green strap. My budget was a Halio C4th. Pick your series. I don't think it really matters. They're all great. And finally, my wild card was the Vacheron Constantin Dual Seas Overtime 1-of-1 in titanium for Corey Richards on Everest.
Man.
There's the five.
Again, a very James Stacy collection.
Yes.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I think I'm going to end up falling into the same trap, which is my sport watch is the Rolex GMT Master 2 with the Pepsi bezel on the Jubilee bracelet from 2018. My dress watch is the Acrivia Chronomec Contemporain in platinum with the white dial. My complication is the A. Langenzona Lange 1 Tourbillon Hansverk Kunst. Hopefully I can get through that word. Also from 2014. And then my budget pick is the Hamilton Khaki Field Mechanical from 2018. Probably just the basic one, the bead blasted case and the black dial. And then my wild card is going to be the AP Royal Oak Jumbo, the 15202ST, the original Jumbo from 2012.
All right. So my sport pick will be the original Tudor Black Bay with the burgundy bezel from 2012. My dress watch will be a Creedor Ichi-2. I'll do the white dial version with a gold case. And that's from 2014, I believe. My complicated watch will be the Celestia, the Vacheron, this incredibly complicated wristwatch with, you know, calendar functions and all kinds of celestial complications, et cetera. But it's still, you know, a very wearable package. I think that was 2016. My budget will be Q Timex. I happen to own one and I love it. And, you know, it's one of the few watches that my wife tends to compliment whenever I put it on and she sees it. And then my flex is a steel ceramic Daytona, we'll say with a white dial. Maybe not a flex in the expected sense, but you know, I mean, it's an incredibly hard watch to get, and you know, it's so I think it qualifies as a flex. So I picked a.
It's a literal flex.
It's a literal flex. Like, yeah.
Yeah. awesome. Well, I think we got four good collections here. Again, we left a ton on the table, but it's because we're picking 20 watches from the last 10 years, which is a fool's errand to begin with. But it's a fool's errand.
Who made us do this anyways, huh? Stevie? Who made us do this anyways?
Yeah, it's
Stevie?
My fault. It's my fault. It's all right. It's cool. I could blame it on Gray, but I won't. I'll take full responsibility for this one. But this was super fun. It was good doing this with you guys. As a reminder to everybody listening, hit the show notes. There will be a link to the post on Hodinkee.com, or you can just go to Hodinkee.com and vote on which collection you like best. We will then, in a couple weeks, come back and do a little like recap episode here. So we'll tell you who the winner is, what do we decide? It's the less winner is what we're calling it, who the less winners mm-hmm. are. And then we'll talk through some of the kind of like idiosyncrasies of taking on a project like this and, you know, the watches we didn't get a chance to talk about today. So thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you to you guys for participating in this. Really appreciate it. And this was a fun one. May the best collection win.